Thanks, Kyle, for flipping over to that. The family news, I'm doing something different for a while. You see on the back is what's called a Bible Bite. I believe that's something Scott Beyer invented, I think. Anyway, he wrote that little article on that particular verse. And I was thinking that since the Sunday morning class has been studying the early beginnings of a nation of God, Israelites, from Genesis, we've worked, studied, and discussed Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, just finished Deuteronomy. I thought I'd backtrack a little bit and borrow some of his Bible bites. I did not write that. That's Scott Beyer. He's an evangelist in Monroe, Washington. So I thought I would put this on the back where normally I would put an outline. And I don't leave a whole lot of room for notes for the talk, but sorry about that. But I thought there's some good nuggets, and he's pulling out some verses in these Bible bites, and yes, they're out of context yet. He puts them in context in terms of application, referring to other passages like he does in this one. And that they're pretty short, and they're things you can, they're mini lessons or mini sermons, if you want to put them that way. So you could even read them as we partake of the Lord's Supper, because everything in the Bible in some way eventually connects to the Lord. Today I happen to ask one of the readers to read it, and I might do that in the future. Or I might borrow from Scott and bounce off of some of his thoughts and create a lesson from that. So that's not what we're talking about this morning, Genesis 24. We're still in Psalm 15, and it has to do with, in a sense, with Rocky Balboa. You know who he is? Fictional character from the movies Rocky. And Rocky starts out as a city fighter. He's not making a whole lot of money. He's in rough neighborhoods from a rough background, Italian background. And at one point, he has to become a collector, doesn't he, for a loan shark. Tony Gucci, I think, is the loan. This is all fiction. But he's a collector for a loan shark. And we'll be talking about loan sharks this morning to a certain degree. So I won't define and look at exactly what a loan shark does, but we're going to look at the process that they may have used, whether it's in the mafia, Italian mafia, which I have no background in. I don't even have any background in the Irish mafia. But I'm assuming these tactics were used where, a money lord would lend money to a business, keep his business going, but then exact interest that's above and beyond. And if the business owner couldn't pay, then the collector's sent around. And if it's not collected, then the business is eventually absorbed. And it gets kind of ugly. We're in Psalm 15, where he asks the question, Lord, who may dwell in your sacred tent, your holy tent? Who may live on your holy mountain? And in verse 5, it's the one who displays a holy use of money. This is the person whom the Lord approves. That first verse, we're summarizing that verse as the person the Lord approves, in this case, exemplifies and uses money in a holy manner. Now, would you be surprised that God cares how we use our money? Is that a surprise to any of us? It shouldn't be. Money is one of the most frequently occurring topics in the Bible. I've even read or I've heard it taught that it is the most occurring topic in the Bible. The most frequent. And I'm thinking, even above the idea of salvation, but I think the idea is that the word money and the words associated with money, you find that come up more than any other words or topics in the Bible. Now, is that surprising? Because the logic is actually pretty simple to follow as to why God cares on how we use our money. For example, do we not look to see how children spend the money we give them, whether it's allowance or chores? We used to assign chores to our children, but we didn't pay them for it because our idea was that room and board was their payment for their chores. However, living out on that acreage up there, we give them projects, larger projects, and they accomplish that. Sometimes they could earn some money in that. However they acquire money, whether it's birthday money or tooth fairy money, parents are watching and observing how our children use their money. If they're responsible, we'll continue to give them more, allow them to have access to more. It's the same as privileges. For example, the privilege of being able to stay out late on a Friday night. A parent may give the child this instruction that you are to be home by 10 o'clock.
What? 10 o'clock? That's not very late.
Yeah, wine. And we say, is that, wait a minute. We set 10 o'clock because we want to see if you're trustworthy. If you're trustworthy and you're staying out of trouble and choosing your friends wisely and using the car properly and all that kind of thing, then we'll let the leash out a little bit. You can come home at 10:15. I wasn't that rigid. We'll extend it to 11, things like that. Letting the leash up. You're wanting to see how they handle those that kind of privilege. So it's the same with money. If they are wasteful and irresponsible, we may choose to withhold our help. Now, God has applied these same principles upon His children. And in Psalm 15, especially down in verse 5, is one guideline regarding the usage of money. There's a principle here. And David says, there's our question, does God care how we use our money? David says, yeah, God approves of the man who lends money to the poor without interest. And he probably has in mind what's stated in the law, where God commanded the people of Israel not to collect interest on another when money was lent or loaned out. The law wasn't that they couldn't loan money, it's just you loan money to your fellow Israelites, don't collect interest. And let's read some of that in Exodus 22:25-27. I've got the NIV on this. Where's my reader on that? Is that you, Lysander? Oh, Taylor. Sorry, Lysander.
Mm-hmm. For that is his only covering, it is the only cloak for his body. What else should he sleep in? And it shall come about when he cries out to me, I will hear him, for I am gracious.
All right, let's go ahead and follow that up with Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25, it's up here at the top, if you're taking notes, 35-37.
Now in case a countryman of yours becomes poor and his means with regard to you falter, then you are to sustain him. Like a stranger or a sojourner, so that he may live. Do not take usurious interest from him, but revere your God, that your countrymen may live with you. You shall not give him your silver at interest, nor your food at gain.
Okay. So here's the idea, and his version, Taylor's version, uses the word usurious interest. We don't use that word much. But the idea was not for a fellow Israelite not to charge interest. They could charge interest to a foreigner came in their midst. But when you put these passages together, especially with some in the New Testament, look through the Bible on this, it at least from my viewpoint, it seems to be clear that God does not approve of loaning money and then exacting interest, charging interest that's exorbitant. That's what usury is. The lending of money at exorbitant interest rates Or another definition, an unconscionable or exorbitant rate or amount of interest. Specifically, interest in excess of a legal rate charged to a borrower for the use of money. Now, we go down the timeline. See, your timelines are usually written from left to right. So, from your viewpoint, the Roman time period, from David's time to the Roman time period, for example, if there were wealthy people, since there were no banks during that time period, the wealthy would often loan money. But there weren't a whole lot of laws regarding that, especially amongst the Romans. They wouldn't have been following God's laws. And so it's very easy and a great temptation to loan money and charge interest rates. And eventually, if your borrower could not pay back, they could eventually end up being your slave. Now, usury, this idea existed before the Romans were invented, because we can see that. We were just reading from Exodus and Leviticus. That idea of usury, that concept had been around way before the Romans. The idea of, oh, it's a money-making scheme, and it actually hurts individuals. That's why God said to his people, don't do that to your own fellow Israelites. All right? Why are there rules in the use of money? Because Jehovah, especially to his people Israel, cared. He cares how we use our money. And when you begin at David's time period and go, where are you again? See, we'll go, here's David here. We'll go not as far as the Romans, but about right here where Judah and Israel were just about to be taken away into captivity. Lysander, he's going to read from Ezekiel. Down here, Ezekiel 22, 12 through 13. This is a time period where it's right smack in the middle of Judah being taken away. Those of you who remember, Judah was taken away into Babylon in three waves. And Ezekiel's written right smack in the middle of that. He's still pronouncing judgment on them, the consequences for their grave sins. And this is one of them. Okay, Lysander, Ezekiel 22, 12 there. Yeah, there's a key. You've forgotten me. Go ahead and read the next verse.
Behold, therefore, I beat my fist at the dishonest prophet which you have made, and at the bloodshed which you have, and at the bloodshed which has been in your midst. Can your heart endure, or can your hand remain strong in the days when I shall deal with you? I, the Lord, have spoken, and will do it.
So he's pretty clear about that, isn't it? You have taken interest and profits, interest for profits. I believe we're talking about the usury here. And hopefully you turned with him to that passage. You look in the context of verses just before that. I'm not going to have him read it. Because as Woody says in Toy Story, they are not fit for preschool toys. The verses ahead of it describe some things that the Israelites were doing. Very improper regarding immorality. That's in the same context, folks. Is lending money, is it the same kind of sin? Is the consequences of those sins going to be the same? I think there's different weight in terms of consequences of sin. But they're all sin, and this is one of them. Lending money and exorbitant interest. And I bring you to your attention the context, because the Lord looks at it as a serious matter, and it's with those other sins, and it shouldn't be taken lightly. Nehemiah had to deal with this after the conquest and after the captivity, and they came back. Nehemiah has to deal with the same thing. So, Lysander, Nehemiah 5, 6 through 8.
So I called a great assembly against them, and I said to them, according to our ability, we have redeemed
All right. We've had Israelites coming back from Babylonia, and they've settled in Jerusalem. And Nehemiah says, we've already been in captivity. Are you selling them back into it by exacting usury, charging these exorbitant rates to where they can't pay them and they become your slaves? He says, we've got to stop this. And they were silenced, found nothing to say. Verse 10, I and my brothers, Nehemiah speaking, and my men are also lending to the people money and grain, but let us stop charging interest. So he's referring back to that law that was read in Exodus and Leviticus, where from Israelite to Israelite, don't even charge the interest. You may loan the money, but don't charge the interest. So there's some... The idea here, folks, is God did not want them to try to hurt others in an effort to gain more money. And that's seen in the couplet in Psalm 15, the next phrase, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. The NIV reads, and does not accept a bribe against the innocent. So again, the idea here is, let's not use money to try to hurt other people and get ahead of others in our selfish pursuits. Does not accept a bribe against the innocent. You put that together with the loan and money thing, really what we're getting at is the motive behind what we do with our money. We need to ask ourselves, how are we treating, in our case, our fellow brethren, how are we treating mankind in regards to money? Now, some of you might be thinking, well, I'm not like some of those wealthy Roman people that may have lent money. I don't have any money to lend anybody, so this has nothing to do with me. Well, again, let's look at this attitude here again and the motive, not just behind what we do with our money, but how we behave towards others. And are we treating them with kindness and respect? And by our actions, not putting them some way or another in a difficult situation. I'll let you think of examples that might happen. The idea here again, are we acting in the image of God, and will God approve of us from the way we use our money and then our attitudes towards others? This is love your neighbor as yourself. This is in here. This is up there in verse 3. Nor does wrong to his neighbor. Okay? So they're tied in together. Are we acting in the image of God, and will God approve of us? The concept of being judged, decisions being made regarding us concerning whether we will remain in the presence of God and walk with God, is based upon how we use our money. And that's kind of odd to us, isn't it? Let's keep our thumb at Psalm 15 and go to Matthew 25. Matthew 25, down in 14 through 30, you got the parable of the talents. Now, don't look at talents and don't define that as abilities. Talent was a denomination of money that was used in the Roman days. And here in this text, servants were judged based on what each did with the money given to them by the master. And as we may know, hopefully you're familiar with this parable, each servant was given a different amount of money, right? First one 10, next one 5, third one 1. And the judgment, or the decision as to what the master was going to do with them, and it's interesting. He says, enter into the joy of your master. I had never really zeroed in on that phrase before, but he says that to the one with the 10 talents, the 10 pieces of money, and the 5, but not the one with the 1. The judgment is based on how the servants used the money in the service of the master, or if it was used selfishly, which apparently is what the one talent fella did. Now, the context, if you went back to Matthew 24, the disciples had asked Jesus, tell us, when will these things happen? That means the stones of the temple being torn down and not one left upon another. They ask another question, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So from 24 into this chapter, to my understanding, Jesus answers that. And of course, there's a lot of disagreement on which part of these chapters fit the answers that Jesus gives. But it's regarding fulfillment. And there's where the disagreement is, fulfillment of various things. And I don't want to get bogged down into that. I want to look at this, the fact that Jesus lays this out and has to do with money. Now, a lot of teachers will take this and apply it to a lot of different other things and get us to think about what are you doing with your skills and your abilities and time and possessions and health and all those kind of things. And I've done that before, and I have no problem with making that kind of application. But Jesus specifically uses the idea of money here and how these servants use their money. And sometimes that's kind of thrown out the window. But I want us to think about, is there anything we can learn from this in regards to money? And one thing is this, that God did not give or bless us with money so that we would hoard it or be selfish with it or be consumed by it. Amen? We are to serve God with it. Is serving God the last thing for which we use our money? There's a question for you. Do we get stingy when it comes to using money to serve God? And you notice what's in the last part of that chapter 25 from verses 31 to the end? It's that idea when the king says to those on his right, come you who are blessed of my father. I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Folks, what is the message there? Serving others, isn't it? Taking ourselves off the high place, high horse, getting down just as Jesus did and washing the feet of others, so to speak. Serving others and using our money and our finances and our possessions and our time and abilities to serve others. I just love the end of 25. That is love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. That is loving your neighbor. There's specific things right there. It's a beautiful picture. It gives us great ideas on how to serve others. And when we serve others, he says, you are serving me. So the caution for us is remembering that God observes even what we do with our money. And apparently, in some way and somehow, we will give an account of the things God has given us and how we have used them. So David concludes this psalm, if we went back to Psalm 15, he concludes the psalm by saying, he who does these things, and I lost my Psalm 15 in my Bible, he who does these things will never be shaken. Are your ears perking up on that? Never be shaken. Our ears ought to perk up when we hear such a statement that will never be shaken. We could connect it with what Peter says in 2 Peter 1, 5 through 11. There he says, he's got the context there. He's telling us all the attributes we need to add to our faith. And Peter concludes by saying, if you do these things, you will never fall. Same idea, isn't it? Never be shaken, never fall. In great contrast to those who do not choose to love the Lord, oftentimes their lives are shaken, aren't they? They're unstable. And we've seen people go round and round and can't find any stability. And they're always biting their nails and wondering how they're going to survive, and they keep rejecting God. And sometimes we find God's people in that situation, but if they're truly trusting in the Lord, they'll turn to Him for help. But Peter concludes also, if you do these things, you will never fall. And so I'm asking you to make this your goal also. If we want to have the security of God's approval and the knowledge that not only will we dwell with Him, but we are dwelling with Him in His holy temple. We are in His presence. We are walking with Him. Then we must have, and you've noticed in this series, many of the slides use the word holy. What does that mean? Set apart. We are setting ourselves apart when we choose to dwell in the Lord's tent and on His holy hill. Psalm 15 is really faith in action. The whole psalm there is ways to act. Not the only exclusive ways to act in our faith, but you see faith in action. And this was what sets us apart, some of the things, when we put it into our lifestyles, some of the things that will set us apart from those who reject Him, from those who choose not to dwell in His holy hill, who choose not to love Him. Possessing holy character sets us apart, where we are determining and developing the character that God has. He's the holy God on His holy mountain. Can you develop holy character? David says, it's the one whose walk is blameless. And remember, we described that as that does not mean sinless. That means no blame can be held to our account. Why? Because as that song says, where did I put that songbook? Draw nearer, still nearer. Grant me the cleansing thy blood doth impart. There's how we are blameless. And the one who does what is righteous. Holy speech is involved in this. David describes it as the one who speaks the truth from their heart, whose tongue utters no slander. Holy conduct is a part of this. One who does no wrong to a neighbor and casts no slurs on others. And holy values. This is the one David describes as one who rejects or despises a vile person, but honors those who fear the Lord. And then there's holy integrity, and we looked at this last week. This is the one who keeps an oath even when it hurts, and then they don't change their mind about it. And then today, the holy use of money, the one who lends to the poor without interest and does not accept a bribe against the innocent, the one who's thinking about others and does not desire to hurt others. Brethren, Psalm 15 is our, we could word it this way, it's our active faith and our active love stepping into His endless, eternal love. And that's where we can imitate Him, because we are spirits just as He is a spirit, correct? And the Spirit produces certain kinds of fruit, and one of them is love. And I put Galatians 5 up there. There's other fruits of the Spirit, aren't there? And that all ties into this whole thing. Some of us last night at the Pierce's were discussing Micah 6:8. Anybody remember that one? What is the... Remember way back a few... that's too far back. Some of these lessons, I asked some of you people might be asking, what do I do? I'm a Christian now. What do I do? And I was changing that to ask, who should I be? Let's ask ourselves, who should I be? But when you go back to what should I do, that's really what Mike is asking. What does the Lord require of you? To do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. That's really what Psalm 15 is describing, isn't it? It's a love towards God, and it's a love towards fellow men. Are we acting in our faith? Is our faith spinning? Is it stink, dull, stagnant, or is it active? Along with our love for God. All right. All of us will become closer to God, nearer to God in these areas of our lives. And these are very practical. Psalm 15 is very practical. And I hope that we as a local congregation cannot just, look at the slides and go home and say, oh, that was nice. Can we think of ways to implement these in our lives? We've got so many different ways. Some of you are going to implement parts of it more than others and vice versa. But it's very practical, isn't it? Very practical. Are there any of you here today who would like to dwell in the holy tent of the Lord? That are already not there. Those of you who have claimed to be children of God, you're in His holy temple. You're in His presence. You're in His kingdom. Would you like to be in His kingdom? That Nearer Still Nearer has a verse in there about coming to Jesus, being cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. That's the starting point. Let's stand and sing.